This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, April 15th, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. Bad news. It's tax day. Sorry. Cato's Adam Michelle has even worse news, that income taxes are slated to go up in about a year and a half, but he has a few ideas to fix things. We spoke last week. Did you do your taxes, Adam?
I did do my taxes, yes.
When did you finish your taxes?
For me, it was the last minute. Waiting till this weekend would give me heartburn. I did them last weekend.
And for our listeners, today's the day. We're recording this on the Friday before tax day, so do your civic duty. It's not really a civic duty. It's just that they have an implied gun pointed at you if you don't do it. And bad news for people who ended up owing taxes, I suppose, is that in about a year and a half, taxes are on pace to increase. Why is that?
Yeah, so at the end of 2025, beginning in 2026, the 2017 tax cuts almost entirely expire, everything other than the corporate rate. And that means taxes increase on basically every single American. It's about a $400 billion tax increase each year beyond that point. And if Congress does nothing, that's what's written in law.
What would be the good policy here with respect to making taxes, I guess, dependable in terms of what those rates are, making the rates nice and low so people can be productive? What is the best case scenario for like long-term planning of our tax system?
So the 2017 tax cuts and reform moved the tax system in the right direction, but it was by no means perfect. And in addition to expiring, there's a lot more that's left on the table. So the 2025 sort of fiscal cliff leaves an opportunity for Congress to make additional reforms. They can continue to eliminate loopholes and subsidies in the tax code. They can lower rates. They can combine tax brackets. All of these things can boost economic growth, return more money to individuals, but it also has to be paired with sort of broader fiscal reform. We can't have $2 trillion deficits every year and continue to sort of keep everything on its current path. Spending also needs to be brought down into line with what we're bringing in the door.
With specific respect to individual income taxes, I needle you every once in a while about repealing the 16th Amendment. But our colleague Chris Edwards assures me that the feds would find a way around that in terms of excise taxes. So we're going to table that discussion for now. For reforms that might in the short run make things uncomfortable for people, but in the long run that might be productive, you suggest, I don't know how much you were joking when you suggested this earlier, eliminating federal withholding.
I wasn't joking. I think that the system by which the government conscripts employers to collect taxes on their behalf simply makes the system more impenetrable than it already is. When people go to file their taxes or they haven't yet done already today, when you actually sort of do that final reconciliation with the IRS, people get a tax return or a tax refund often. Most people actually do. But that's just the government repaying you money you overpaid throughout the year. That's not a tax cut. It has no relation to how much tax you actually paid throughout the year. And so a system in which you actually had to do that reconciliation and send a check to the government, I think would add transparency to the system and get folks a little bit more engaged with how much money Washington is actually taking from them on a yearly basis.
The joke that I've heard many times in different contexts is eliminate federal withholding and move election day to April 16th.
that would certainly change incentives, I think.
In terms of other tax reforms that Congress ought to have on the table, maybe they are on the table. What are they?
The trade-off in tax reform is a trade-off between bases and rates. If Congress doesn't want to cut spending, they need to broaden the base to lower the rates. That's how you make sort of, that's how you increase the economic efficiency of the system. And so there's about $1 trillion of tax loopholes and other preferences in the tax code that could be reformed in order to dramatically cut rates for individuals on capital gains, continue to cut the rate for corporate income. All of those things should be part of the discussion in 2025. My fear is that Congress is going to be boxed in by what they did in 2017 and feel like they need to sort of stay in that mold. But I'm encouraging them to break outside that mold and go bigger and bolder than they did the last time they did this big reform of the tax code.
I have heard, Adam Michelle, that Warren Buffett, and this is a turn of phrase that turns an otherwise merely misleading claim into a false claim, which is the idea that Warren Buffett pays less in taxes than his secretary. Now, there's one way that you could change that to make it merely misleading and say he pays a lower rate than his secretary, because it's, you know, nonsensical to suggest that Warren Buffett pays less in taxes than someone who makes a small fraction of what he does.
Yeah, so the president has this statistic where he says billionaires or wealthy people pay a tax rate of 8%, and that's just simply not the case. They're fudging the numbers in a bunch of different ways, but if you look to the president's own Treasury Department, they put out estimates of average tax rates each year. And so in 2024, the top 0.1% of income earners, by their own estimates, pay a 33.5% average tax rate. And if you go down the income scale, that rate falls pretty consistently. And the bottom 20% of income earners actually pay, on average, no or negative tax rates. That's including payroll tax and a bunch of other sort of federal level taxes. So the U.S. tax system is already highly progressive, and actually more progressive than many of our counterparts in the OECD and sort of across the European Union.
Adam Michelle directs tax policy studies at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast basically anywhere you like. And thank you for listening.